Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. We finally have spring weather, and the Braves have won four in a row. As of we're recording this, I forget that it's a little bit delayed, so maybe they'll have lost a game by then. But things have been looking brighter.
Things are on the upswing for your Braves, and Ronald Acuña. How happy or unhappy is he?
Yeah, I think he's not too pleased. That's a whole different conversation. Man, I don't know, man. I think he had a point, but I don't like that he's airing it out publicly.
Well, for those who don't know or don't follow the Atlanta Braves, which I don't think there's many around here except us Met fans who, you know, want to revel in it. There was a player, Jared Kelnick, who didn't run out. He thought it was a home run, stays in the ballpark, tries to get to second, gets thrown out. He doesn't get taken out of the game. Apparently a few years ago, Ronald Acuña, same thing happened to him. The manager yanked him out of the game for not running. Acuña, who's rehabbing, not with the team, decided to tweet something. Gee, if that were me, I would have been pulled. So yeah. that creates a fun situation for the Braves, does it not?
Yeah, it does. It certainly does. And there's been a lot of now created a lot of, divide among Braves fans on who was correct and who, whether he should have tweeted, whether he shouldn't, whatever. I don't know. I've just been watching winning baseball, Jim.
And we're going way off tangent, but you and I get started on baseball. Did you see what the Mets did that day after Acuña's tweet came out? What the Mets scoreboard operator did?
I don't think I did. I think I missed that one.
So Acuña's brother, Luis Angel Acuña, is a rookie with the Mets. Right. And when he comes up to bat on the scoreboard, they put him up. And you know how it's not unusual to put a little tidbit about the player on there? When he comes up to bat, they put him up there, and then they put up Luis Angel Acuña, who has not tweeted yet today.
I like that. You know what? I can appreciate that. I like the good humor. I like the good humor there. Well played, Mets.
All in good fun. Well, the Mets are in the middle of playing the Phillies, which is similar to playing the Braves, an intra-division rivalry series. They're always fun, Dustin, so that's why I love talking to you. By the way, one of our colleagues, he's a huge Phillies fan, so just a heads up to our listeners, get used to it. You'll be hearing some baseball talk through the summer, but how about we shift gears and actually talk some college football, Dustin? And the Nico, last name I can't pronounce, from Tennessee, his story, it's the story that won't die. It just keeps going on, feeding us week after week with content, Dustin. He has finally made it official. He's going to a Big Ten team. He's going to UCLA. Apparently going to not only not make the $4 million he was asking for at Tennessee, apparently he's even going to make less than the $2 million he was making at Tennessee. And then in the counter move, UCLA had already brought in a transfer portal quarterback by the name of Joey Aguilar from Appalachian State, who a smaller type program, but had put up some really nice numbers. He was presumed to be the starter. Now, with Nico coming in, not the case anymore. So he decides to transfer where, Dustin?
UCLA. Gosh darn it. Tennessee. Freudian slip. Tennessee.
It is as close as we're going to get. We keep saying with the money, it's more like professional football every day. This is as close as we could get to a trade.
Yeah, I even saw somebody tweet out like the trade, what the trade was going to be, along with a player to be named later. Somebody had tweeted that out. But so, and then the other funny thing was, I can't take credit for this. I don't know who said it, so I apologize. But somebody also sent out a post that basically said, wouldn't it be the most 2025 college football thing if, you know, Joey Aguilar leads Tennessee to a bowl game, Nico leads UCLA to a bowl game, they play, and then they both opt out for the NFL. So they don't actually play against each other. But you know what's interesting to me about this, Jim? Last week we had our Nico show, which all four quarters were dedicated to that, and we did not talk about this, and I had not thought about it until after the fact. Not only is he making less, like, just on paper than what he was going to make at Tennessee, California has the highest state income tax among the 50 states. He could make like a quarter of what he was making.
Yes.
Like, just terrible business.
And it's not just a tax issue, it's a cost of living issue out there LA.
Another great point. Yes.
There was no doubt, Dustin, that he overplayed his hand. And like so many things in life, the pendulum will swing both ways. For the longest time, the players were getting the short end of the stick. They had no leverage at all. They played for, you know, the scholarship, room and board, which was not a terrible deal. But there were other people making millions of dollars, and the whole college football world was making billions of dollars. And the players definitely weren't getting their cut. Now, every court decision, every decision at all goes their way as players, and it had to happen. Is this kind of the beginning of the pendulum swinging back?
I don't know, because I think we talked about this a little bit on the last show, and I don't know if this is the point where things start to change in another direction. Because again, when this first started, and maybe it's just slow to matriculate down, I don't know. Like, I thought that the market would correct itself, because it's just such bad business, in my opinion. Like, people just throwing millions of dollars at a college athlete. Like, it makes sense when you're in the professional ranks, like, because you are an organization or a team trying to better your roster. Like, you're getting paid by the team, by the organization. And even in some of those cases, there's bad decisions made and people get way overpaid or they get too long of contracts. In this case, there's no guarantee that a player is going to stay 1 year. There's no guarantee that he's going to perform at a high level. There's so many different variables at the college game that I just felt like, even if you're a booster loaded with money, even if you've got T. Boone Pickens money, like, just throwing millions of dollars at kids in NIL money was crazy. Yet the money keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the gate. So I don't know. I do think that, again, and I think I said this last time, I do think that at some level, Tennessee may have set the standard for some other colleges to be like, you know what? We actually don't think you're worth this kind of money. We're not going to renegotiate any contracts. If you prove yourself and get us to, you know, whatever is in, you know, whether that's winning a conference championship or getting to a bowl game or getting to the playoff or getting to whatever round of the playoff, then maybe we'll talk. But we're not going to just cave to your demands. We know that you make the money, but we still have to have some semblance of like power and leadership within our organization.
Dustin, with the thought of, you know, the pendulum swinging, and the analogy to professional sports, is there going to be some correction, like in the NFL? You watch how they value, say, positions differently than they did before. It's not just about big names. I guess the quarterbacks will always get the big money in the NFL, but you saw for the longest time, although it may be changing, running backs weren't getting the big contracts. But an edge rusher, offensive tackle. But I'm wondering if in college football, where the correction might be, is if you look at the last couple national champions, Michigan and Ohio State, what they had in common was continuity and retention of their star players. So they had veterans, guys who've been around for a while. And now Ohio State, they did everything. They retained but they cherry picked with the portal, you know, handpicked just a couple positions that fit. And I think some players were just smart enough. Hey, this is a national champion potential team. Makes sense for me to go there. It's an investment in my future. But retention seemed to be the key.
Yeah, I think that that's correct. And I thought where you were going to go with that, Jim, was I thought you were going to say offensive line play. Like, I think that that is so critical. It's critical at every level of football. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's even more important at the college level. And I might be overstating that. I mean, it's pretty important in the NFL. But nonetheless, you look at Michigan, I think that that offensive line, when they won the national championship, had been together mostly for 2 to 3 years. I think the same thing was true. I know that Ohio State had brought in an Alabama. Seth McLaughlin had brought him in from Alabama, but I think he was like the only one that hadn't been on that offensive line for a couple years. So I think there's continuity on the offensive line. I think that that is probably the most important position to have that. I think you can kind of, obviously, if you can get guys that have been there 3 or 4 years together, to even 2 years together, that certainly helps at the skill positions. But I feel like you can put in a wide receiver. You can place in a wide receiver. Like, look at Jeremiah Smith. He was just a freshman last year. That's not a transfer portal piece, but that's a new piece. He fit right in. And so I think at the skill positions, you can have a little bit more of that fluctuation or flexibility to bring in those kind of guys, and they can adjust a little bit quicker. Offensive line is so important because it's not just about blocking. It's about communication and knowing where you have to be. So that's where I think you might start to see quarterbacks. I think you're right, are probably always going to make the big money, but I think offensive line is, that's where I think a lot of people are going to start to put their investment. If they feel like they have a really strong offensive line, they're going to try to retain those guys up front. Or if they need a couple pieces, they'll go out and be big buyers for those players. That's just my opinion.
Well, and the other part to it, again, using the Michigan and Ohio State models, Will Howard was not a superstar quarterback, but he was a veteran with a lot of experience. J.J. McCarthy, veteran, a lot of experience, but they invested in up front. And, you know, Penn State fans are looking and keeping their fingers crossed. This year's offensive line is as good as it's been in years, maybe even decades at Penn State. And oh, guess what? A veteran quarterback who's going to be in his third year starting. Maybe that's the model, Dustin. All right, that is it for quarter number one. A lot more to go. Stick with us. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Quick reminder, Happy Valley United, the Penn State Collective, is sponsoring a very special night. It's called We Are in Philly. That's right, an evening with Penn State football in Philadelphia. A lot of Penn Staters in the Philadelphia area, Dustin. This event is going to be on Thursday, May 8th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Union League in Philadelphia. Tickets are available at happyvalleyunited.com. It's a chance for you to meet coaches, players, and some Penn State football greats, including Super Bowl winning Saquon Barkley. That's just, if you're a Penn State fan, meeting Saquon, Dustin, That is, you know, there is no greater day than that other than a national championship. So Saquon will be there. There'll also be several other former Penn State players like Christian Hackenberg, Adam Taliaferro, Adam Brenneman, Grant Haley. If you're a Penn State fan, you know who Grant Haley is. Proceeds will go to Happy Valley United to support Penn State student athletes and also to support the Michael Ann and Saquon Barkley Hope Foundation. So great cause. Again, tickets and more information are available at happyvalleyunited.com. Great event. Yeah, Philadelphia is a couple hours away from me, Dustin. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it or not, but I'm going to try to. Hey, if I'm there, that's the real attractive. That's
right? Exactly. I was just going to say, I thought you were going to mention yourself you were going to be there.
Well, I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, Dustin, just fair. In case I'm not there. All right. We spent the first segment talking about our buddy who keeps on giving, Nico Iamaleva. See, I needed to say the name once, Dustin, just to show that I can do it. Again, just the next chapter in the craziness that is college football. But I want to shift to another topic, and I really don't think there's any validity to it, but it came out. Several people picked it up. The rumor of perhaps Utah coming to the Big Ten, Dustin. Don't think there's a lot to it, at least not right now. But just let's start with Utah. What kind of fit do you think they would be? Are they a logical fit for the Big Ten?
Logic is out the window, Jim. I think I don't know that there's a lot of logic. I don't know. To me, the Big Ten already has probably the biggest markets out west. I don't know that Utah makes a lot of sense in terms of television market. If you wanted to add teams, I think the biggest reason you would add some teams from the West would be to maybe alleviate some of the travel, not for football, but maybe for basketball, volleyball, softball, baseball, alleviate that for some of those West Coast teams. Because when you looked and you saw throughout, I don't know about how the football season worked out, but in terms of, I think Washington had the most travel in terms of football in the Big Ten. If you looked at basketball, I think all four West Coast teams had the most travel. I don't think that was particularly close. So that would be my guess. If they were looking to alleviate some of the travel, Utah makes sense in that regard from a television perspective. I don't think so. I would think something like a Florida State or a Miami. Obviously, we've always talked about Notre Dame, but I don't think they're going to get off their high horse anytime soon unless they're forced to. Logical, I don't know. I think it makes sense from a geographic standpoint, where if you want to give teams like USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon more time closer to home, so they don't have to fly to the Midwest every other week, then I think that it makes sense. But in terms of television revenue or eyeballs, I don't know that Utah really adds that much more to the conference.
Well, everything is about television money. Mm-hmm. So first of all, if you're the Big Ten, and I think the Southeast Conference falls into this also, Dustin, that if a new team doesn't add market share, which translates into television dollars, not going to happen. These schools don't want to split up the pie more ways. So probably the first thing you've got to look at is, when do these television contracts run out? And I think it's in about 4 or 5 years, 2030 and 2031, that the contracts will get renegotiated. Then it becomes, okay, who are the markets that might bring in money? And one of the people who were talking about this was talking about, okay, maybe at the point where the ACC implodes, which people feel are coming, it's interesting. A lot of folks, they're not saying, you know, Florida State, Clemson, who are the major football names right now, they're not necessarily attractive to the Southeast Conference because they already have teams in those states, in Florida and right. South Carolina. But teams like North Carolina and Virginia, North Carolina, the state school, also obviously a big name in basketball, but getting the North Carolina market would be a lot more eyeballs. So maybe there's some balance there too if you bring in a North Carolina and a Utah at the same time, Dustin.
Yeah, and North Carolina was one that was mentioned. This was like years ago. North Carolina was mentioned as a potential team that could be added to the conference when there was 14 teams because of not just the basketball scandal aside, the academic prestige that North Carolina would also bring to the Big Ten. And as you mentioned, the market. I don't know. This would be interesting because Clemson's a big-time power football program. I don't know that they still have the cash. I don't know that they have the cachet. Like, that's still a small market type of school. Like, I don't know. I don't live in South Carolina, but I would venture to bet that state is 70% South Carolina and 30% Clemson, if not more divided. So I don't know that they do much. Like, Florida State would make more sense because that's, to me, that's a more national brand. Plus, then you get into the state of Florida. I think, as you mentioned, North Carolina is probably going to bring a lot of that state with it. And so then you can add Utah. I just don't know that Utah adds that much, no matter who you pair them with. But again, if you're trying to help in terms of the travel situation, if you want to get into another market, the other aspect too is Utah is probably going to be, I don't know, BYU is pretty prominent out there. So maybe that's a 50-50 state. So maybe you get about half of Utah in terms of television market. I don't know. Like, to me, North Carolina, even though it's not the most prestigious football market, I think that makes more sense from a television perspective than it does Utah.
Well, Utah, there's a population issue.
Right.
Like you mentioned BYU, who I don't think that would ever happen in the Big Ten. You know,
no,
it's, you know, not the large state schools are where they're headed. What makes more sense is like a North Carolina in a Virginia, where I think the Big Ten still likes to at least express that they care about academics. And, you know, North Carolina and really Virginia would do that. Utah, by the way, is an AAU member, and I wasn't aware, apparently a pretty strong research school, so they have that going in their favor. It's a school with at least a pretty decent profile in college football because of, you know, the good team. What I'm also wondering, Dustin, if especially two more teams would get them to 20 teams, would we finally get to where there would be pods or divisions? Like you mentioned, you know, some of the other sports and the travel with it. You add Utah, you now have the four West Coast teams in a Utah. Could you have a pod of five teams where, say, in basketball, you play the teams within your own pod twice and the other teams you'd only play once, reducing travel? And I could almost picture, you know, this East Coast pod where whether it's North Carolina or Virginia, Maryland, Penn State, Rutgers, as a pod, and then you split up the Midwest teams into another pod.
Yeah, I think you could potentially see that. I mean, we talked about this with 16 teams. Would you go to 4-team pods, basically? It's a good question. I think it makes more sense. Like, to me, if you have 20 teams, and people probably aren't going to like this, and I know that they're just going to do this because it makes sense from the television perspective, and but like, to me, if you do two 10-team divisions for football, because then that gets you your 9 conference games, which you already have. So right there, you don't even have to do any work. You just have to split it up equally. Now, the problem is you're going to have, if you do East and West, obviously you're going to have some teams in the Midwest that are probably going to be fairly pissed because they're going to have to fly. Probably you're looking at Iowa, Nebraska, and I don't know, Illinois. I guess it would depend on who you add. But you're going to have some teams that are going to have to fly out that way quite a bit. So I don't know. The pods is an interesting concept. I don't know if it would actually happen, but it would make a lot of sense. And it would save the Big Ten money because usually it's the conference or the NCAA that pays for that travel.
Well, I think if you start to determine, you know, or even create the rivalries that USC will play UCLA, Washington, and Oregon every year, in football. Now, the downside to, you know, the 10-team divisions, you may as well just split the conferences again. You
know, right.
Because if you're only playing your side. But basically, and I think the question that you missed in all this, Dustin, is are Ohio State and Michigan going to be happy? Other than that, what difference does it make?
No, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. All things run through Columbus and Ann Arbor.
And make sure they play each other the last weekend of the season at noon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, they would a lot. They would have a large say-so in who would probably get added to the league and how everything looks from a structure standpoint, for sure.
They would have the only say, Dustin. Let's just call it the way it is. They would have the only say. And, but, you know, I was going to say all kidding aside, but I'm not kidding. That's actually how the conferences run, you know, and we all know that. But I what I liked about the pod idea is the ability to rotate the other teams. If you did 10-team divisions, you're locked in. These are my 9 conference games, and you never see the other side. And candidly, for me, as a fan, and who cares about the fans, but it's seeing these new teams is what makes a lot of this conference expansion really interesting. Now, I'm going to let you respond to that, Dustin. I, of course, just kept speaking until we hit the end of the segment. So I would have had to cut you off after 10 seconds anyway, but I'll let you respond to that when we come back after this break. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about college football. And when we wrapped up the last segment, Dustin, it's always a fun conversation, this conference expansion. And I think any talk right now is premature. The contracts are in place, the TV contracts. So it'll probably take new contracts before there's conversation about expanding. I think it will happen. And I think the timing of probably the ACC imploding will match those TV contracts. But when we finished up, you had mentioned the idea of splitting the Big Ten into 2 10-team divisions. Hey, it's a natural. You play all 9 other teams in your division. The 2 winners of the division play for the conference championship. It works out well. I thought the downside to it is, you know, you get the same 9 teams. You never see those other 10 teams who are in your conference, Dustin.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think, too, as I was spitballing here with myself in the break, the 30-second break we took, I think here's the other interesting thing. And I think we've talked about this. If you have 4 pods, so you have to, if you have 4 pods, let's say you have to win your pod in order, which would make sense to qualify to make the Big Ten championship game. So then you've already got, now it's down to 4 teams. So you've already got 1 tiebreaker situation. I'm going to take the top 2 teams and compete for the Big Ten championship game. But then I'm also going to take the other 2 winners and they can play for a 3rd, 4th place. Maybe that helps your seeding in terms of the college football playoff. Maybe they don't want to do that. Maybe they think it's going to potentially hinder a team's opportunity to get into a college football playoff. But you could potentially have, you know, a 3rd place game. I don't know if fans would have a large desire to see that, but maybe it's something where, hey, you know what? The team that finished third is going to host this game, and it's going to be played on Friday night before the Big Ten championship game. Now, there's going to have to be a lot of moving parts there, and we're already playing 15, 16 games. But there's a possibility that you could do something like that, too, if you wanted to give something to all the pod winners.
Well, it would probably tie into this with the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten have been talking about where they want the automatic bids. And as part of the automatic bids, what they would do is instead of just having a conference championship game, say they get four auto bids, they would have team three playing six and four playing five for those auto bids. And most importantly in this whole discussion, Dustin, is the question, gee, how does this affect Michigan and Ohio State? Because they have to play each other. They would have to be in the same pod. And if you just took the winners of the pod, that means one of those two teams wouldn't make it. So we certainly cannot have that, Dustin. So
no,
that idea out the door.
I think they would put them in different pods and use it as a protected rivalry. So you could still have, I legitimately think that if you remember correctly, back in the Leaders and Legends division, Ohio State and Michigan were not in the same division. And I believe the thinking behind that, whether they said it or not, was, okay, they might play the last week of the season, but then we might also get them in the Big Ten championship game the following week. If I remember correctly, the Leaders and Legends, that's how it was split. Now, when they went east and west, they split Purdue and Indiana and gave them the protected rivalry because it's like, well, we're never going to see them in the Big Ten. We're not going to see them two consecutive weeks anyway, right? So, I do think that that would be the path that they would take, and people would probably be up in arms, but I think it would kind of go against your thinking of you basically rotate who that second pod is going to be. But that could get you. So if you played every team in your pod, and this is, again, we're thinking about five team pods. So that's four games. You play another pod. That's five. And then we're going to have one non-pod protected rivalry game to protect the Michigan-Ohio State game. If that's what it came down to, would that not surprise you?
Oh, God, no. The gymnastics you'd have to go through to humor those two programs, Dustin. We all know that's what they're going to do. Now, I was going to say, though, if you do the four pod winners and two wild cards so that you could have three playing six and four playing five, it's a way to make sure Ohio State and Michigan could get into it, which, of course, is what – let's face it, that's what we're all here for, to make sure that Michigan and Ohio State are taken care of. And, you know, as I say this, I'm realizing how salty and how bitter I sound, which is exactly the message I'm trying to get across, Dustin. That's the tone I want to be getting across. Am I being effective?
Jim Unapologetic Galante. That's what we're getting today, folks.
That is it exactly, Dustin. And without apologies, it's the way it is.
Well, and I want to throw something. Yeah, I want to throw something out here because this was not on, I don't think this was on our cheat sheet of the show today, but I did see something where Heather Dinich from ESPN had basically written that she was going to be involved in some of the meetings and following along with the college football playoff stuff. And it sounds like maybe it's not coming to fruition, maybe this could be a long shot. And I don't know if you even know what I'm about to say, but there was something along the lines of conferences could potentially get automatic bids based on television ratings. And let me tell you how much I hate that. I'm throwing a curveball at you because that's something that, again, I don't know if there was any validity to it. I don't know if that was just something that was tossed at, because people got to remember when they do these meetings, they throw out about 90 ideas and maybe two or three of them stick. Like, they just throw everything against the wall to see what they could possibly do to, they say improve the game, but I don't know that that's always there. It's basically make more money, as we always talk about, right? And so that's just one thing that I don't like, the idea, first of all, of the 4 automatic bids for each conference. We've talked about that, even though it probably doesn't make a lot of difference. Like, we're probably always going to see the SEC or the Big Ten get 3 to 4 teams in, so it's probably not a huge deal. I just don't like it in theory. But I hate the ratings even more. And how do you do that? Is that based on historically? Is that based on year to year? Could you see potentially see, well, the Big Ten, you know, had 60% of the viewership this year, so they're going to get 60% of the bids. And that's just me throwing a number out there. Yeah. But it's something where I just we've taken such a great game and you're watering it down. And I feel like there's no better way to do that than with that potential proposal.
Well, I want to differentiate the auto bids and this based on television ratings. What I did see, Dustin, was a headline, something referencing that, but it struck me as so ridiculous that I didn't even read the article. I figured it would be one of those AI-generated articles that, you know, they latched on to half a sentence that said something about, gee, a team with better ratings in the regular season would get better ratings in the playoffs. But, you know, that is just plain wrong. You know, look at like a Florida State team who the year before had an undefeated regular season, might be very popular, and then turns into a 2-10 team. Would you literally want to put them in the playoffs?
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, you are just throwing out the whole idea of competition. You're just throwing that out the door. So I think even if it's just a slim, you know, portion of the, almost like they use it as a tiebreaker, which I would argue they already are.
Okay. They are. It's 100%. Yeah.
You know, if it's between Alabama and Appalachian State, Alabama's getting in. So, but if you, going back though to the auto bids, where I think, and I was just totally disgusted by the idea. I hated it just like everybody else did, and everybody got on their soapbox yelling about it. However, and you did reference this, those two conferences are going to get 4 teams anyway, no matter what. But what it did would allow them to do something else, which is like a Southeast Conference Big Ten Challenge, where right now, my goodness, I can't risk the loss. But by having the auto bids by conference, meaning, hey, that doesn't count in my conference standing. So if I have Ohio State playing Alabama, obviously one of them's going to lose, but it doesn't hurt their opportunity to be one of the top 4 teams in the conference. So we as fans get rewarded with a good early season game, and the schools don't get punished for playing tougher games.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a good argument that you've made. And I think I'm coming around maybe to that idea because I think we're probably going to get to the we're probably eventually going to get to the point where it's 4 auto bids per conference anyway. So you just end up living with it. I really do wish the thing is, it's so skewed. And I don't know how there is a formula that I think the college football playoff uses. I do believe that there is a formula, as much as people don't want to believe that. I think people think they just pick teams based on who they want in there. But I do think there is some level of formula. I wish they would let us know what that formula is. Like in college basketball, it's pretty clear, right? Like yes. How wins above bubble, they don't use RPI, net ratings,
tier one, tier two.
Quad one, quad two, all that kind of stuff. They give us the idea of the formula. I think if college football, if they would just release their formula and let us know and not just tell us, well, it's based on wins and losses, or, you know, speak in code basically whenever the chairman gets on TV, I think we would be more understanding and be like, okay, well, if this is the case and we think it's going to be better for in terms of competition, so we don't have to watch Penn State play Villanova and then nobody state and then Southeastern Northwest Division Tech, I'm all for that because we want better games. And we were promised that with a 12-team playoff, we'd probably get better games. But right now, Power 4 teams are in the habit of scheduling G5 and FCS opponents, and who's to blame them? Why would you blame them? if the ultimate goal is to reach the playoff, get 10, 11, 12 wins and then get your spot.
See, now you've learned from me, Dustin. You spoke right till about the end of the segment, so I'm going to respond when we come back.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We are talking college football. And Dustin, you were talking about how they in college basketball for the tournament, they essentially release, this is their methodology formula to get and rank the teams. Very different in that there are 64/68 teams who make it. Really very, you know, you might argue my team was seeded fourth and I thought they should have been seeded third.
Right.
And as the tournament goes, it changes so quickly, you know, that number eight seed plays nine, and then they play number one, you know, where an 11 seed, if you beat number five, you only have to play a number four. You know, it's almost like being 10th or 11th might be actually better than eighth or ninth. So some of it isn't as important. In college football, you only have the dozen games. And I think they're trying to protect themselves from, you know, locked into a formula. And I think they want to give themselves the opportunity if the formula showed Indiana better than Alabama, but I want to put Alabama ahead of them. I want to be able to do that. And I actually think when you look at it, where is there anything about it this past year that you would argued with the 12 teams seated the way they are? The only real debate was it not SMU versus Alabama? And you know what? Alabama, you have three losses. Don't lose three games.
Right. I think again, I don't think that there was anything that you would change. Like this year, if I remember correctly, it was fairly clear cut. You could have made the argument for Alabama, Ole Miss, or South Carolina. You could have made it. Not saying you would have been correct, but you could have made it. But I think people get swept away. And look, Kirk Herbstreit and everybody else on ESPN did not help their situation by eventually saying they thought that Indiana got in because they had fewer losses. Like that is what it is. Like you have to win the football games ahead of you. And, but they just didn't, to me, they didn't help the situation, especially in those first round games. But every other game was pretty enjoyable outside of that first round. And by the way, we got much more meaningful football in the month of November with, again, I keep using the Big 12 as an example, because that thing was like, there were like eight teams competing for the two spots in the Big 12 championship game heading into the final week of the season. That is the kind of drama that we want in college football. Like that's, everybody talks about that 2007 season where there were like USF was the number two team in college football, right? Yeah. Like everything obviously played out, and that's kind of the chaos that makes the game beautiful. And so I don't think I would change anything or would have changed anything. People have talked about the seeding, but again, I don't like to base it off a 1 year sample size. Let's do this thing for 4 or 5 years. And then if you still continue to find inconsistencies or issues with those first round games, then maybe you can make some changes. But the other aspect too is like, how many times in the semifinals of the 4-team playoff did we have blowouts? It was a lot. We had a lot of blowouts
all the time. And yes, that people who are latching on to the first round games being mismatches, what they didn't take into consideration is there was also the home field advantage. So you had a team that was already seeded higher, so they were the team that would be the favorite on the neutral field. So you now gave them the home field, which, by the way, I think is the right thing to do.
I agree.
What I do think, though, is that automatic conference champion getting the one of the top four seeds, I think that was and will. I know it's a small sample size, but I think it demonstrated the flaw in it. You could argue, you know, Oregon and Ohio State should have been the two top seeded teams in the country, but there's no way they could be 1-2, 1-3, 1-4. The best you could get is 1-5 with the seeding. And you had both Ohio State and Penn State probably underseeded because of those automatic seeding things. And that also lent itself to the mismatches in the first round.
Right. I would have trying to think of how tell me the regular season record for Penn State really quick.
Penn State lost one game. They lost to Ohio State.
Right. And okay. That's
how they got into the conference championship game against Oregon.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure my memory served correctly. So what I'm about to say then is accurate. I would have had less of a problem if Penn State got a bye instead of Ohio State. You had to punish Ohio State for that second loss.
Correct.
Even though they won the head to head, I would have been okay with like, hey, you know what? Penn State went through the regular season 11-1. Their only other loss came because they had to play in the conference championship game to the best team in the country. We're going to go ahead and give them the four seed or whatever. I would have been much more like, to me, even though Ohio State ended up winning the national championship, I in that situation, and I know that you're just making a case, but I think that there is some level of nuance where it doesn't necessarily have to be, certain like the team that eventually won. I think Penn State could have made a case. I don't know about Tennessee, but you could have made a case for probably some other teams instead of was it Arizona State that got that fourth bye,
right?
I just think that you.
And Boise State, right?
Yes, Boise State, correct. You could have made a better case in some of those circumstances for a Penn State, because I still think on some level you have to punish the teams that lose those regular season games.
And you could argue, and I'm more familiar with the Big Ten, so yeah. My apologies to the Southeast Conference, but –
No, don't apologize.
Never apologize about the Southeast Conference. But Boise State, Arizona State, Penn State, Ohio State. If you had Penn State, Ohio State in those, you know, 3-4 positions getting the byes, you could justify that. And if Arizona State and Boise State would have been 5th and 6th instead of 3rd and 4th and played in that first round, you probably would have had more competitive games in that first round, more logical, and had more deserving teams getting the byes. Now, whether if you had to choose between Penn State and Ohio State, you made the point, which I think is valid. Ohio State should be punished for that second loss. If you go back to 2016, when you had the 4-team playoff, Penn State beat Ohio State head-to-head, but they had a second loss. Ohio State did not, and Ohio State made the playoffs, and Penn State did not. And, you know, it was justified because of Penn State's second loss. Same deal here with Ohio State. But, you know, and this is where I like the 12-team playoffs, Ohio State was arguably the best team from the beginning of the season on. The fact that they lost to Oregon at Oregon by a point or two, whatever it was, you know, really did not mean Oregon was so much better than Ohio State. On a neutral field, I think most of us thought Ohio State would win. And the 12-team playoff gave them a little bit of a margin for error. And I think this playoff showed Ohio State was the best team in the country this year. They were. So that's why I'm such an advocate for the playoff. And to me, the only issue is that seeding, the automatic bye that Arizona State and Boise State got, Dustin. To me, I think that's wrong, even though it was a small sample size.
Yeah, I won't. Maybe we could see something. I won't go as far as to say it was wrong. I think because the thing that I like about the 12-team playoff and the thing I complained about more than anything with the 4-team was there was you had no set criteria in terms of you don't know what you have to do to get in. If you went like there was a year when Wisconsin, I'm going to use this as an example. Wisconsin was undefeated, hadn't lost a game. Now, their schedule wasn't great, but then they lose. They played Ohio State really well in the Big Ten Championship, but they lost that game. That was their only loss of the season. Didn't get in. There's no – Penn State, the year they won the Big Ten Championship, there was no way they knew how to get in. Like, it was basically go undefeated, and we saw with Florida State go undefeated, and they still didn't get in.
Well,
right?
We'll see. There, though, Dustin, I don't think Arizona State or Boise State – should have gotten the bye, but I thought they should get an automatic playoff bid. To your point, you win your conference, you get in. Winning the Big 12, winning the ACC gets you an automatic bid. It just doesn't get you the automatic bye.
No, I'm fine with that. But at least there's a knowledge going into it where it's like, this is what you have to do to get a bye. This is what you have to do. So from that standpoint, that's why I say, I don't want to say it's wrong. I think it can be tweaked.
Yes. And to use the basketball analogy again, you know, you win the Ivy League, you get into the NCAA tournament. You're not necessarily going to get a high seed
because
you won your conference, but you are going to get in. And I think that's where, you know, it helps. And circling back to this automatic bid issue with the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten, a lot of what they're going to do is because they can. They're going to flex their muscles. That's what they're going to do. And I think that automatic bid, you know, with three or four bids, especially if you expand, I don't know why they would expand to 14 and not 16. But if it's 16 teams and those teams each get four automatic bids, I think the other conference, and as part of it, ACC automatically gets two and Big 12 automatically gets two, Dustin.
Yeah, I think the thing to remember is this giving those conferences the chance to win an automatic bye is kind of how we were able to rope everybody into a 12-team playoff. Like that was part of the deal. Now that we're here, now you're going to start to see some of the adjustments made because everybody wanted a piece of the pie. The Big 12 was getting slaughtered. The Pac-12, which is RIP, but the Pac-12 was getting slaughtered in terms of the number of playoff bids. Like the Big Ten and SEC, particularly the SEC, was dominating. So this was a way to kind of rope everything in and say, see, look, it's equal, fair playing ground. And now that it's a 12-team playoff, now the Big Ten and SEC are going to start to finagle it so that they can get things the way they want it. So I do expect that's going to change. I don't know that it's going to change immediately, but I would guess in the next 3 to 4 years, they're going to probably change that automatic buy and say, you know what, instead of winning your conference, you have to be one of the top four teams, or if they expand, whatever the case might be.
They have to get universal approval, unanimous approval to do it right away. It'll be another year. That is it, Dustin, for the show. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.